This is Baseball Tonight, the podcast.
This is the Baseball Tonight podcast for Tuesday, August 17th, 2021. And today will be better than yesterday. Producing from his home studio in the foothills of Connecticut is Taylor Schwenk. I'm Buster Olney doing the podcast from a family get-together up in the Adirondacks. And Taylor, I saw this news overnight and it just blew me away. A T206 Honus Wagner baseball card sold for $6.606 million, which includes a 20% buyer's premium early on Monday morning. The previous record for the most paid for a baseball card had been $5.2 million for a 1952 Topps Mickey Mantle card. That was just back in January. $6.606 million. What do you think, Taylor?
Yikes. You got to be so rich to just be tossing $6.6 million around for a piece of paper. Come on. I mean, I know things, you know, everyone values different things, but that's a little bit crazy to me.
So you're the person who's going in and hearing about prices paid for art, saying, what are we doing here? What? Well, it's just a picture.
Kind of.
What is the problem?
I know. I have like a secret thing down inside me where like I look at a painting and I'm like, if someone told me how, you know, like I feel like I could do that given the proper instruction. I know that's completely irrational of me and it's definitely not true. But for some reason, I feel the same way about dancing, even though I can't dance. I don't know why. And it's not true again. But that's the way I feel when I look at art.
Okay. I definitely don't feel that way about art. I can't even imagine someone having that thought that, you know what, if you just took a few instructions, yeah, I could do that Mona Lisa.
Maybe not that, but maybe some more abstract looking stuff, some stuff, you know, like pictures, they kind of look like they're hazy. It's supposed to be like a nice, beautiful, like the landscape you're looking at Lake George, but it's like a little bit wispy and not clearly defined. I feel like I could do something like that. Messing around with shades of colors. Give me a couple of YouTube tutorials. I'm on it.
Yeah. And also, you could get a hit off Jacob deGrom when he's fully healthy. Okay. No, I got it. You know? All right. Let's get to the good stuff. In San Francisco last night, the slumping Mets played the Giants, and it didn't go so well.
Here's Bryant, who did the same thing his last time, and he crushes one. Headed for Berkeley. Goodbye. On the next pitch, another home run. And that's the second of the game for Chris Bryant. Now it is 6-3 Giants.
The great John Miller with that call. The Giants win the game 7-5. They lead the Dodgers by 4 games. Meanwhile, the front runners in the National League East, the Braves, face the Marlins, and they got it done in the fourth inning.
3-1 on the way, swung on and crushed. Deep right center field, back to the wall. That is gone. You bet Freddie can give him the lead, a 3-run homer here in the top of the fourth inning. And Freddie made him pay. And the 2-1 to Duvall. This one is hammered, rising high and deep, and an atom bomb for Duvall. My goodness. That went up onto the concourse over the seats, and he's back in Miami making lots of noise with a 2-run homer here in the fourth.
Those calls from 680. The Fan, the Braves win 12-2. They have a 3.5 game lead over the New York Mets, who are in third place in the National League East. The Phillies, of course, in second place. The Yankees had a makeup game on Monday. Gerrit Cole on the mound, and he got supported by teammate Joey Gallo.
Don't like him now. See ya, a bullet. 2-run home run. 2-1 Yanks.
And that was it. Michael Kay on the YES Network. Gerrit Cole was great, pitching 2-hit ball in the sixth inning. He struck out 9. The Yankees start a series against the Red Sox today, a doubleheader with game 1 at 1 p.m., second game at 7 p.m. Eastern. The San Diego Padres, struggling for starting pitching, decided to take a chance on Jake Arrieta. This is, of course, a veteran who won a Cy Young Award in the past, but this year his ERA with the Cubs before he was released the other day, 6.88. The Padres in Colorado, taking on the Rockies, and Charlie Blackman got a big hit for the Rockies.
Here's the 1-0 pitch to Blackman. Hit well to center field. Grisham moving back at the track. It is over and out of here. Charlie Blackman with his 8th of the year, a 2-run shot, and the Rockies open up a 5-1 lead, going deep on Weathers again.
That from 850 KOA. Now the Padres would come back. And then in the bottom of the ninth inning, this happened.
And he drives it to right. It's got a chance. It is gone. Touch of all time, C.J. Crone. He sees the Padres' home run and does one better.
Meanwhile, the Reds are chasing the Padres for a wild card spot. They took on the hapless Cubs, who went into Monday with an 11-game losing streak. And in the bottom of the fourth inning, Jonathan India continued to roll.
He swings and hammers it deep left field, way, way back into the second deck. Jonathan India puts the Reds on top 2-0 with a two-run shot.
That from 700 WLW at the end of the day. The Reds trailing the Padres for a wild card spot by just 1.5 games. India has now homered 8 times in the last 17 games. The Chicago Cubs and Reds will meet in the 2022 edition of Major League Baseball's Field of Dreams game in Dyersville, Iowa, according to multiple reports. The Tampa Bay Rays signed reliever David Robertson. He will join AAA Durham and then try to make his way from there. He recently was part of the USA team in the Tokyo Olympics that won a silver medal. A woman testified against the Dodgers pitcher Trevor Bauer in the first day of the restraining order hearing that he's going through. There's more testimony coming later today.
Buster, before we get to our friends Jeff Passan and Sarah Langs, don't forget, it's NFL season. It's football season. ESPN is in full force in getting ready for NFL. Keyshawn, J. Wilton, Zubin, with former number one overall pick Keyshawn Johnson, are on ESPN Radio every weekday, 6 a.m. to 10 a.m. Eastern time. You can watch the show on ESPN2, or you can listen to the podcast wherever you get your podcasts. And also, don't miss Abby's Places, the new ESPN Plus series from soccer superstar Abby Wambach. Abby takes you around the country to get the heart of soccer history and its cultural impact. Abby's Places is now available streaming only on ESPN Plus.
We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. And Indeed doesn't just help you hire faster. 93% of employers agree Indeed delivers the highest quality matches compared to other job sites, according to a recent Indeed survey. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences, so the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of the show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Buster. Just go to Indeed.com/Buster right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/Buster. Terms and conditions apply.
Vivid Seats wants to get you to the games you love this spring. Experience every pitch, assist, and game-winning shot live and in person. And the best part? Each transaction is a step toward a free 11th ticket with Vivid Seats rewards. Score unbeatable perks like free tickets, surprise seat upgrades, and annual birthday deals. As the official ticketing partner of ESPN, Vivid Seats is offering you $20 off your first $200 ticket purchase with code BASEBALL. That's code BASEBALL. Visit VividSeats.com or download the app today. Vivid Seats. Experience it live.
Jeff Passan covers baseball for ESPN. Jeff, how are you doing today?
Wonderful, Buster. How are you?
I'm doing great. And so is Joey Votto. This was him last night, bottom of the seventh inning.
Pitch. And a line drive into center field, and there's 2,000 for you. And not only the fans in the seats, but the Reds teammates in the dugout. All a standing ovation for Joey Votto, and he hits 2,000, a dead set bullet into center field.
That call from Jeff Brantley, the Cowboy, on 700 WLW. Joey Votto, 2,000 hits. I don't think there's any doubt Jeff, when he goes into retirement and we start talking about his Hall of Fame candidacy, that as time gets closer, I think people are going to realize that he's going to be close to unanimous election, if not unanimous. What do you think?
Neither of us votes. Is that correct?
That is correct.
All right. Well, I will say this. Because neither of us votes, Joey Votto is going to have two fewer votes because you would put him in first ballot. I would put him in first ballot. I think everyone should put him in first ballot. He's such a good modern candidate in terms of somebody who, because of his skill set, is going to be more appreciated by the baseball writer today than he would have been by the baseball writer of the past. And to me, it didn't even take this season, this resurgent season from him to put him in the no doubt category. He was already. He's a guy who for his career has gotten on base nearly 42% of the time. Unless you're slugging like 290, then you're going into the Hall of Fame if you get on base 42% of the time. Unless you are the biggest butcher in the field that baseball has ever seen, you're getting into the Hall of Fame if you get on base 42% of the time. But the fact that Votto has really turned himself into an entirely different player at this stage in his career is just kind of fun to watch. This guy who has made himself to a fault, some would argue, about discipline, is not abandoning that discipline entirely, but is selling out for the power that has always been there and has turned into like a real slugger. And at age 37, to see that and to see where he's been taking the Reds, it's a pretty cool story.
Yeah, and he is I think the word you use, modern is perfect for him because I've always felt like he's ahead of his time in his thinking and yep. The way that he approaches hitting, famously carries the Ted Williams book, The Science of Hitting, with him. I don't know if he still does. He did early in his career, and I have said to him for years, you need to write that next book, advance the Ted Williams Science of Hitting, because that's his understanding. And certainly way ahead of his peers in terms of thinking. Jeff, I did a long piece on him. I want to say about 7 or 8 years ago. It must have been close to 10 years ago now. But it was right after we had the season and the question of whether or not Mike Trout or Miguel Cabrera was the MVP. And, Cabrera with the Triple Crown and Trout with his range of skills. And during the time he was having a photo shoot for that piece that I did, I was kind of standing around and watching. And he looked over at me just absolutely cold. He said, tell me your thoughts on Miguel Cabrera versus Mike Trout for MVP. And I said, I thought absolutely that it was Trout because of all the value that he brought. And I could almost see a look of relief on Joey's face, like, oh my God, thank God the guy who's doing this story is not a complete idiot. But he was glad that I got the answer right. There clearly was a right answer and a wrong answer in his mind. And it would have probably been very different than a lot of his peers at the time.
It was a lot different. And I remember, like, it's interesting looking back at 10 years ago, how much things have changed. And I think part of that, interestingly, is because baseball writers have done a much better job of embracing this idea of the whole player and of looking at a metric like wins above replacement, which honestly, Buster, I still believe is flawed. Like I don't see WAR as the be all end all. I still think defensive metrics, especially in the small sample that is one season, don't always entirely and accurately reflect the state of a player's fielding contributions. That being said, though, WAR told a very clear story when it came to Mike Trout and Miguel Cabrera. And that story is one that a decade later would be, I think, much, much different.
All right. The end of the Reds' victory last night, they were 1.5 games behind the Padres. San Diego, so desperate for pitching now that they signed Jake Arrieta. I can't remember who it was I saw last night on Twitter. It may have been Kevin Acey, who tweeted out that the veterans and the Padres were so happy that they signed Jake Arrieta. And
do you know why that is?
Because he's a guy they know. That's the reason why.
Not just that. He shut them down earlier this year.
Yeah.
That, I mean, that's like, that's where the Padres are. If we face someone who is good, bring him on in. We'll take him.
Where do you see this? Where do you see this race? Because it looks like these two teams will be tied together for a while.
Yeah. And it's interesting to look at their schedules. You know, there are, I said there's 7.5 bad teams in baseball. Let me see if I can do this off the top of my head. There's the Baltimore Orioles, the Kansas City Royals, the Texas Rangers, the Washington Nationals, the Chicago Cubs, the Pittsburgh Pirates, the Arizona Diamondbacks, and the Colorado Rockies when they are on the road. And that is the half team right there because they are god awful away from Coors Field. Those 7.5 teams, I think, may wind up being the ones who determine playoff spots this year because the chasm between them and the good in baseball now, I hate prisoner of the momenting, and I'm always very wary of that. It just feels right now like the gap between the haves and the have-nots in baseball is extraordinarily large. And the fact that we're staring at two teams with dozen-game losing streaks right now sort of reinforces that notion. When you look at those bad teams, the Cincinnati Reds are going to face them 19 times between now and the end of the season. And the San Diego Padres are going to face them 3 times. That's not good for the Padres. Now, I did hear from somebody in the San Diego front office who said, yeah, but we're better against good teams and we stink against bad teams. So this is actually a good thing, which was a very sunshiny way of putting it when your schedule is an enormous disadvantage. I did look though. Yeah, they stink against bad teams. The Padres are such a weird team, Buster. They are so immensely talented and good, but not great, and can flash like they're the best team in baseball and can look like they don't belong on the same field as a great team. Like, they're very confusing. And if they don't make the playoffs this year, that's a bad, bad sign considering how much they've put into this window that they've got right now.
Oh, there's no doubt about that. And I know you've heard the same thing from other front offices, that essentially now, because of where they are with their pitching, they have a 2-year window ahead.
Yep.
Like, it would be 2022 and 23, because they would still have Yu Darvish and Blake Snell if he's good, right? And Joe Musgrove becomes a free agent after next year.
Yep.
And they don't have a pipeline of pitching behind. You know, they're not the Tampa Bay Rays in terms of having guys behind.
I mean, one of those guys who was in their pipeline is going to be with the Tampa Bay Rays for another 5 years in Luis Patino, and looks quite good, by the way. Whereas the guy who they held on to, Mackenzie Gore, the Mackenzie Gore mystery is very interesting to me. He was sent back to Arizona Complex to work on things. You know, scouts think he has the yips, and there are questions about the quality of his stuff. And this was a guy who, you know, even going into last season was seen as the best pitching prospect in baseball, and someone on whom the Padres were relying to join those guys in Chris Paddock and others in the rotation. And I think Ryan Weathers actually is going to be a pretty good big league pitcher when it's all said and done. But baseball is cruel, and baseball is cruel in that what looks like a team that's going to be in the middle of World Series contention may, because of injury, circumstance, happenstance, and schedule, find itself watching on TV in October.
You wrote a full piece that posted yesterday on ESPN.com about distinct advantages, disadvantages in your eyes in regards to the schedule. Who are some other teams that really jumped out at you?
The Phillies. And we've been talking for, you know, really since the second half started about the Phillies' scheduling advantages. They have more than half of their games left, Buster, 24 against those 7.5 bad teams. And when you look at who they're competing against, the Braves have 14, which is the fourth most among the 16 contenders I highlighted. And the Mets have 8. And I am not gonna stick a fork in the Mets at this point, because one thing that I've learned in recent years is that the playoff odds that we see all the time, to me, really don't matter until you get to like 2 weeks into September. It's just the game is so weird. You can see teams win, you know, 6 in a row, 9 of 10, and jump back in there. And in a division like the NL East, where there really aren't any good teams, honestly, like where the closest thing to a good team, in my opinion, is the Atlanta Braves, who are missing their best player, the slugger they signed for $64 million this offseason, and, you know, the guy who was supposed to be at the top of their rotation in Mike Soroka, and don't have a bullpen really to speak of. The fact that they qualify and constitute the best team in that division means even going into the last week of the season, unless a team has a 7-game advantage, I'm not going to call the National League East. That said, these 24 games that the Phillies are playing against this level of competition has to make them the favorites, just because even if you are not a great team yourself, you should be beating these absolutely awful teams that you're going to be playing.
100%. And on the flip side, with the Mets, to be in this this gauntlet of games, four consecutive periods against the Dodgers and the Giants, you may not put a fork in them, but I may by the end of this set of four series. And also, they've got a series against the Yankees built around 9/11. They've got a series against the Red Sox, and they have 3 games in Milwaukee against the best, you know, a team that might have the best starting pitching in the National League. If the Mets don't make the playoffs, what's going to happen there, do you think? Because I do feel like that in the eyes of new owner Steve Cohen, is going to be an enormous disappointment.
By the way, Buster, do you think there's a chance that the Brewers wind up with the best record in baseball this season?
How about that?
I mean, they're nipping at the heels of the Giants right now, and the Giants have to face the National League West, and their schedule is not easy. The Brewers have to face the National League Central. As for the Mets, it got ugly in a hurry. And it's interesting. We are surrounded at ESPN by Mets fans. And I know we're surrounded by Mets fans because Mets fans all season long have been talking about how the bottom is going to drop out. And I've been trying to say, don't be a Mets fan, have faith, don't worry about it. And they're like, no, this team stinks, and it is going to happen, and it's going to happen in a hurry. And I will say this, Mets fans, they've got self-awareness. They saw that this team was flawed, and this flawed team, it feels like there's going to have to be changes somewhere, unless Steve Cohen is far less impetuous than perhaps we realize. Now, I don't think he's going to be bringing back a team that resembles this one. I don't see Michael Conforto coming back, and I almost wonder if he's played his way out of a qualifying offer at this point.
Yeah.
You know, we have no idea what the state of Jacob DeGrom is. And if Jacob DeGrom's arm really is problematic longer term, Buster, how can you look at this organization and say that we're going to pour resources in right now and try and win when the guy who is keeping us afloat isn't going to be around? Hopefully that's a stretch. There's no clear indication at this point that Jacob DeGrom's injuries are going to affect him in the long term. But the fact that he's missed as much time as he has with an injury that we still don't really know a whole lot about feels like it's something more serious that he's trying to rehab and get back to without having to go under the knife. If Jacob DeGrom gets cut, Buster, and I'll turn this to you, where exactly does that leave the Mets in the short term going forward with Stroman hitting free agency, with Syndergaard hitting free agency, with DeGrom a big question mark. I mean, I don't know what the Mets are at that point.
No, I completely agree with you. And I am really curious. I would love to be a fly on the wall to know exactly what the feeling is about how how we've gotten to this point. Because it did feel like early in the year when the Mets, yes, they had their share of injuries, but there was kind of a glass half full, glass half empty thing. Like, well, you know, the Mets are hanging in there despite their injuries.
Right.
The glass half empty view could have been the Phillies and the Braves and the Nationals and the Marlins were all having problems. And it was a surprise that the Mets didn't separate themselves,
yes,
especially with what we anticipated from their offense.
Isn't that the most disappointing part by far? Remember, I believe last year the Mets had either the highest or second highest weighted runs created plus in baseball. Like, their offense last year in the shortened 60-game season was good. And so to see them have as much trouble scoring runs as they did this year. If you were to ask me what's the biggest surprise to you in the 2021 baseball season, it is the ineptitude of the New York Mets offense.
Yeah, I would agree with that. I thought it was going to be a real strength for them this year. And yeah, they had periods where they had key guys missing and they were relying on 4A players. And
oh, well, everyone does. Exactly. That's no excuse to be there going hand in hand with the Pirates for the fewest runs scored in baseball, which is where the Mets have been all season.
Exactly. I talked with Tim yesterday, generally speaking, about the culture within the sport and the perspective within the sport viewing players who are linked to domestic violence. And that, I think, is obviously an important topic now that Trevor Bauer is going through his hearing. You know, that started yesterday. It'll continue. What's your read on his situation?
I think Trevor Bauer is going to be a very interesting litmus test for Major League Baseball teams. And I was talking with our friend Tony Kornheiser a little bit earlier for his podcast today about this subject. And I think it stands to reason that the world has changed, and in a good way, so much over the last 2 years that our last litmus test was Roberto Osuna. And we remember how that turned out. The Houston Astros had, and organizationally, I think, continued to have egg on their face from that. And this is not just about public perception. It should be about fostering a culture inside of Major League Baseball that is not just hospitable to women, but welcoming to them, considering this is a year in which Jared Porter was kicked out of the sport for 2 years, a year in which Mickey Callaway was kicked out of the sport for 2 years, a year in which Roberto Alomar was banned for life. We've seen all of these things, and Trevor Bauer becomes the put your money where your mouth is baseball situation. And I think it's first going to happen with the Dodgers, and I don't foresee them releasing him anytime soon because it feels like he is going to be suspended. He's going to be suspended for a long time, and the Dodgers are going to get financial relief with that suspension. But upon the completion, Buster, of that suspension, the Dodgers almost certainly will get rid of Trevor Bauer. And when they do, 29 other teams are going to look at him and say, is having one of the best pitchers in the sport worth it? And I don't know if there are going to be 29 no's, but there are going to be a lot of teams that say no. And in the notion that Trevor Bauer has potentially thrown his last pitch in baseball, in organized baseball and Major League Baseball, is a very real possibility.
Yeah. And you mentioned Roberto Osuna. It shocked me yesterday as I was preparing to talk with Tim to go on Baseball Reference and see his age, 26 years old.
Yep.
And he has an ERA, you know, under 2 in Mexico.
Yep.
He clearly would be a player if not for his domestic violence history. He would be in some big league bullpen pitching on a regular basis, but because of what happened, he's not.
I mean, he would be a highly paid closer.
Right. That's exactly right. And I think you're right to in the way you cast it, because it's not only about public perception. It's about what players are saying in clubhouses, like, get sure. this guy out of here. I don't want anything to do with this guy. You know, the Astros, you know, after the fact would tell you that Asuna, you know, was within how he was perceived within their clubhouse. Other players liked him. But at the time that that signing was made, there was a lot of discomfort.
There was. And it's going to I mean, the fact that Bauer is the is the persona that he is, that he is has been publicly very out there and very outspoken and at times has not gotten along with teammates in the past. You know, it's going to be interesting to see Buster if he does not get charged criminally. And listen, it's been a long time that the Pasadena Police Department's been investigating. So there's certainly a chance that there are not going to be criminal charges that accompany this. But even without criminal charges, which used to be the threshold, certainly for teams in the past to avoid signing a player, if there aren't criminal charges, is that going to be enough for a team to, and I think in a lot of ways, they look at it this way, not like we need to be stewards of what is right and wrong in baseball, but can we survive the press conference? It's kind of an ugly way to look at it, but it's the reality of how teams calculate this. Can we survive the press conference? Can we survive the aftermath? Can we survive the fact that we are going to be branded as the team that brought in a player who's accused in multiple cases of abusing women? Allegations that Trevor Bauer denies, that he says were consensual. But look, you can't Photoshop away bruises on the face. That's not something that you are capable of doing in real life. And so the pictures of the woman in California, the allegations of the woman in Ohio, Trevor Bauer can go out there publicly and try to portray and paint these women as being crazy, as being needy, as doing all the things that typically people do to try and defend themselves. But that doesn't take away from the fact that a woman ended up with black eyes. And that is something that I'm not sure any of the 30 organizations in baseball will be able to get past.
No, because if any team were to sign him, all those pictures would emerge.
Of course.
With the news.
Of course. I mean, like, if a team signs him, there's going to be a deluge of people who say, whatever team it is, Team X supports men who abuse women. Now,
in this way, with yes. the pictures beneath on social yes. media.
Yes. And again, you know, Trevor Bauer is contending that all of this was consensual, regardless of whether that's true, that's not something that publicly he is going to win anymore. It's just not. And when you try and make that argument, it just takes something that's ugly and makes it look even uglier. It's almost a relic of how things used to be when it came to the portrayal of women who alleged abuse. It's blame the victim. It's smear the woman. And that stuff on a small segment of society works still. But I'd like to believe that we are in a more enlightened place right now where we recognize tactics and understand that this is something that is not done nearly as much in the present for a good reason.
All right, sir. Thanks for doing this, Jeff.
Thank you, Buster. Appreciate it.
You can now stream the most MLB games on DirecTV without a satellite dish. Yes, the clutch hits, the strikeouts, grand salamis, web gems, with nothing on your roof. So whoever's up there, whether it's roofers, Santa, birds, old-timey chimney sweeps, moody teenagers, thrill-seeking raccoons, you name it, they won't find a satellite dish. But you will find your MLB games on DirecTV. That means DirecTV is your home for baseball this season. Root, root, root with nothing on your roof. Call 1-800-DIRECTV or visit DirecTV.com. Sign up today. Claim based on total games carried on sports networks. Sports availability varies by zip code and requires choice package.
The 2024 NFL Draft heads to Detroit, and it's time to see who gets the job.
Caleb is a unique and special talent throwing the football.
And what sets them apart?
The Heisman Trophy winner is Jaden Daniels.
All of the greats were hired here.
What a throw by Mahomes!
See who gets the job.
Are you ready?
The 2024 NFL Draft begins Thursday, April 25th on ESPN, ABC, and NFL Network.
This is The Numbers Game with Sarah Langs.
Sarah Langs, a reporter and a producer for MLB.com. Sarah, how are you doing today?
I'm doing great, Buster. How are you?
I'm doing okay. I have been worried about you and other Mets fans with what's going on. Tell me how you're feeling as this, as they begin this gauntlet of games against really difficult teams with a series of losses.
This is a really tough stretch. I mean, I think this stretch is playing out just about how I think I expected, just based on how the Mets have been playing everything else. But, it's good for the NL East team, NL East fans, I think, to see how good these West Coast teams are, because I'm not sure that they were really aware of what the Giants are doing. And unfortunately, it came with a loss. But I think, get the Giants a little bit more respect with how good they have been this year by putting it on display against the team.
Let's play the numbers game.
Number three.
Number three is 33. So, I know it's a couple days old now, but I need to talk about this Fernando Tatis Jr. return game and this dramatic thing he is doing where he comes back from the injured list and he hits a home run. This time he hit two home runs when he came back off the injured list. Those were his 32nd and 33rd home runs of the season. So the home run pace that he is on is just insane. Of course, he's not going to get a chance to get to any crazy number like 60 because of the games that he has missed. But he reached 33 home runs in 88 games played. That's the most home runs for any player as young as him, 22 or younger, in his first 88 games of the season. I know 88 is kind of specific, but it's really fun because he passed Joe DiMaggio in 1937. He had 32. So Tatis needed both of those home runs to pass Joe DiMaggio on this list. And every time he homers, he has the most through that many games because he is just on this insane pace. And it's a shame we won't get 162 games of this.
Number two.
Number two is 547. So I have to give my mother some credit for this note because I was talking to her the other day when Brandon Crawford signed his extension. And she was asking me if a player has ever had a career year to this level that he had never had before at this age. She's 34 years old. So Brandon Crawford is slugging 547. He entered 2021 with a 392 career slugging percentage. So only three players in AL or NL history, so MLB history, have slugged 500 or better in a season at age 34 or older after entering the year with a slugging percentage for their career under 400. So we're talking about guys who had never slugged like this before in a career and then had a crazy 500 plus slugging percentage. So Brett Gardner in 2019 slugged 503. He did this. Louis Polonia in 1999 slugged 526. He did that. And Jerry Mumphrey in 1987 slugged 534. So if Brandon Crawford does slug 500, which he's at 547 right now, it's gone up since I researched the note, he will do this and he will have the highest slugging percentage of any of those guys. So thought that was a pretty fun way to quantify what he's doing, which is so outside of what he's done in his career.
Number one.
Number one is 11. So Luis Gil is starting for the Yankees today in the second game of the doubleheader, and he still is not allowed to run in his career. So he's up to 11 scoreless innings. He's already one of just two guys in Yankees history to begin a career with two straight scoreless starts. The other was 1906 Slow Joe Doyle, who we have to mention if he comes up because it's an amazing name. And if we're looking at most scoreless innings to start a career, it was Slow Joe Doyle. by a Yankee, excuse me. He had 18, so it was two complete games. A little bit different than what Heel has done. Obviously, he's 11 innings through two starts, but if he is able to get through even four or five innings today, he would be second on that list for most scoreless innings by a Yankee to start a career. And no player since 1901 has begun any career with three scoreless starts. Now, that's of any length, anything like that, but we'll see if he's able to do that.
You mentioned Heel starting today in that doubleheader between the Yankees and Red Sox. Give me your read on these two teams as we go into these two games.
It's really interesting because I think that the, you know, confidence in the Yankees making the playoffs has certainly risen over these last few weeks. They've been playing much better. They got Gerrit Cole back last night. I think they continue to look better just overall. But the Red Sox, I mean, I still think that there is a lot of you know, the season being put into Chris Sale's arm, being put all of that into, we need to fix this rotation. We need Chris Sale to be really good. He looked great. You know, he gave up the back-to-back home runs, but he looked very good coming back from Tommy John surgery in his start on Saturday, but I'm just not sure that he's enough overall. And so I'm still a little bit higher on the Yankees right now and a little bit on the downturn with the Red Sox. But I think that this is going to be the first series where they're kind of getting back to this equal playing field where we expect them to be on when they match up. So, you know, the other times they met this year, the Yankees were really not playing well. The Red Sox were playing great. So it'll be interesting to see what all happens here.
Yeah, and the Yankees don't have everybody back who've been hit with COVID and this wave of COVID positive tests they've had since the All-Star break. But you know what? They're at the back end of that and they survived.
Exactly.
Got through it and, you know, have seem to continue to gather momentum. So I agree with your take on that for sure. All right, Sarah, thanks for doing this.
Thanks for having me, Buster.
Bleacher Tweets.
Alrighty, Buster. Bleacher Tweets for Tuesday. PK Steinberg writes in, if the Yankee surge continues 19-9 since the All-Star break and they make the playoffs, does Aaron Boone get serious consideration for manager of the year in the AL?
I don't think he will. It would be kind of funny. I do think it's funny because early in the year, the conversation was whether or not his job was in trouble. And then you have a month of games and all of a sudden you're right. I mean, there would be people saying, would he be manager of the year? I still think Tony La Russa is going to get consideration over him. And I also think that it's an advantage to be a small market manager. It's very rare, actually, in the last, I can't remember how many times Joe Torre won manager of the year, but maybe once, if at all. Because the Yankees were always a team with a big payroll. And I think that always works as a disadvantage against their managers.
That is a good point. Andrew Stout is up next at Thomas AC Stout. Andrew writes in, we spent a couple weeks speculating who the NL MVP would be since Tatis has missed so much time, but did all that speculation just go out the window? And Andrew included a video of Tatis's two home run Sunday. Maybe.
Yeah, I think if he's productive down the stretch that he's going to wind up winning the MVP of the National League, because I think he had an advantage over the field when he got hurt. The only question was whether or not he was going to come back, and he has come back. Unless he completely collapses down the stretch, I think he's going to win it at this point. And if you're wondering if the Padres, you know, standing in the National League race has anything to do with this, I think the Padres can miss the playoffs and Tatis Jr. could still win the MVP.
All right. Brian Stone King is up next at Brian Stone King / School of Sweat. Brian writes in, if the Orioles are clearly tanking and not trying to hide it, why wouldn't they keep running Chris Davis out there instead of eating all of his money? Definitely contributes to the philosophy.
Well, they've had a couple. Keep in mind, they've had a couple of first basemen, you know, that they filled in that they are trying to develop. It's not like every, you know, in every game, the Orioles are just trying to run out the very worst players. They just generally designed a team that was going to fail. And Chris Davis, as someone pointed out to me the other day, has been worth more to the Orioles on the injured list than he has been playing. Because you put him on the injured list and you can recoup a lot of money through insurance.
Right.
So it was better for them that he was on the injured list and them collecting insurance.
Yeah, and you know, they're tanking, but I feel like it would be insulting to the players on the field to include him as well.
this definitely reflects your perspective as an Orioles fan, that's for sure.
Yeah, absolutely. Last one for today, Christopher Savage at Savage and Beast. Christopher writes in, hey, Buster, your questions for the Sunday Night Baseball players are very specific to each player. What is your secret, or is it just good investigative research?
So, you definitely dig into their past. You don't want to just ask them, what's it like? You had a surge in recent weeks. Tell me about, your hitting. You want to have very specific things to talk about in their interests, their upbringing, that sort of thing. So you'll call the agent, you'll call a former teammate, you'll call somebody who's been a friend, maybe you talk to a spouse, but you're getting a lot of inside information. And there've been times when I've done those interviews when I've started off like, hey, just a heads up. I talked to your high school coach. I talked to your wife. So I actually think that makes them more comfortable. So when you bring up things that surprise them, like the other day, for example, when I talked to Trey Turner and see, I hear you love to talk about the stock market, then it's not so jarring that that they feel invaded, if that makes sense.
Those interviews are always great, and that's why we play them here on the podcast on Mondays. If for whatever reason you're unfamiliar, we always run those after Sunday Night Baseball. Thanks for writing in, everyone. Hashtag Bleacher Tweets on Twitter, and please follow, rate, and review this podcast wherever you listen to your podcasts.
That's it for today. My thanks to Jeff, Sarah, and Taylor. Have a great day, everybody. Thanks for listening. Stay safe. And remember, hate and inequality based on skin color is something we need to fight against every single day.
Thanks for listening to the Baseball Tonight podcast. If you're playing fantasy baseball, check out the Fantasy Focus podcast wherever you listen to podcasts. The Baseball Tonight podcast.